have more education than they, and they saw, I think, going away to a Sacramento boarding school as an opportunity to expand my educational opportunities. And then at Christian Brothers, in the boarding school, I met teachers who I became very fond of, who were devoting their lives to teaching and to looking after boys, high school kids, and in those days, I sound like an old man now, but in those days, they didn't have reform schools. And these many and boarding schools sort of served as sort of a place for kids from broken homes, mm-hmm. from wards of the courts, yeah. and for people like myself. And so it was quite a mixture of tough kids and good kids, and not that the tough kids weren't good kids, but I mean, it was quite a...
They had different experiences.
It was a hurly-burly atmosphere, and it was all boys. And these men, these teachers, these mm-hmm. Christian brothers, had to make sure everyone towed the line, and they did. They ran a very structured, very strict... Mm-hmm. It wasn't a reform school. It wasn't overly rigid, but I mean, there were rules and regulations, and they were abided by at your own peril. Mm-hmm. And so it was good experience. Mm-hmm. I thrived under it, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was maybe natural that I would want to sort of do the same kind of work mm-hmm. that they did. I saw what they were doing, and so then I entered their religious order and then was with them until, I went in when I was 15 and I came out when I was 30, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I was in 15 years.
Okay, and in those 15 years you went through the
I went
training?
Through the high school, the high school. I went through the novitiate. I went through St. Mary's College. That was owned by the Christian Brothers. And
what did you study at St. Mary's?
I majored in philosophy, and I minored in Greek mm-hmm. and English. Okay. And so I became a high school teacher. Mm-hmm. And was assigned, first of all, to Garces High School in Bakersfield for 1 year. That was my trial by fire in terms of beginning teaching. And then transferred to Sacred Heart High School in San Francisco for 5 years. I've been in the early, late 50s, early 60s. And then, lo and behold, I was transferred in 1962 back to Garces High School in Bakersfield, where I was named the assistant principal mm-hmm. and dean of discipline and high school English, senior high school English teacher and college counselor and God knows whatever else needed to be done.
After spending those few years in San Francisco, how did you find things back in Bakersfield? What was life like? What was going on in Bakersfield at that time?
Oh, in Bakersfield, you know, it's no secret that Bakersfield in the 20s and 30s was the home of the Ku Klux Klan in California. Yeah. And when I was there, the John Birch Society was in full operation, very active, mm-hmm. a lot of chapters. They monitored teachers. Such as myself, circulated petitions against teachers, myself included.
What were you doing at the...
Oh, what was I doing? I was, what I thought I was doing was, I thought I was teaching young men. I were only permitted to teach boys mm-hmm. in those days. The gospel values. And the teachings of the church with respect to, primarily in those days, I was very much into peace, mm-hmm. peace activities, and the civil rights movement in the South. I was very active. I was the founding organizer of a SNCC chapter in Bakersfield.
This is with the students at Garces?
With the students and the parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, parents are interested in that kind of thing. And others in the community at large. So there were professors from Bakersfield City College that were active in SNCC. And we raised funds and raised mostly money and supplies of different kinds and sent them to Mississippi during the Civil Rights Movement. And we had speakers that would come to Bakersfield, like Stokely Carmichael and Marshall Gans and others. I forget one of the other major civil rights leaders, a student came, but I specifically remember Stokely because he was very, a very good speaker, a very thoughtful speaker, I thought.
Mm-hmm. What about local Bakersfield concerns? Sounds like these activities at SNCC are focusing on civil rights movement as it develops in the South.
Well, there wasn't much going on in Bakersfield actually that wasn't related to the outside world. Mm-hmm. I didn't think. I mean, in those days, of course, Hispanics were called Mexicans, and so there was a Mexican community that was associated primarily, of course, with Our Lady Guadalupe Parish in the Bakersfield area. I had some students in my classes who were Mexicans. Most of my class members were sons of growers, and so in a certain way, right in my own classroom, I had this sort of phenomenon where I had the very wealthy, if you will, the power structure, if you will, and then the underclass, if you will. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't any particular hostility between the two of them at all. It's just that the phenomenon seemed to be that each group knew their place. And that was the accepted reality. The only other thing of note in the terms of the Bakersfield area, but it applied to all of California, was the run for the
fair housing.
I became very active with Senator Walter Stern in that campaign, and he and I preached at many black churches primarily on the issue of, I didn't preach, but I mean I spoke, he spoke at the preaching time, I guess, I don't know. And I remember one time I debated the Bakersfield County Board of Realtors on this issue at Bakersfield College in front of a standing room audience only. It was very controversial. I absolutely must have been out of my mind. I was so young, I guess I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, in terms of putting myself in such a charged up atmosphere, and in effect became a kind of lightning rod, even at an early age, for issues. In that case, it was fair housing, but which was of course related to civil rights and the rights of minorities, and so.
As this kind of activity was going on, and you're getting involved in like the Rumford campaign, you're essentially based at Garces, the high school.
Yeah.
What's happening with the parishes, with the pastors, with the church? You know, that in Bakersfield. And were individual clergymen getting involved in this too? Is it, you know, is it pretty much something that's essentially centered at the high school?
Well, I mean, if it were centered, it was at the high school. It was only centered in me.
Okay, well, that's...
I mean, there was... I mean, there, I mean...
Well, were you... That's probably even a more fundamental question. Were there others at the high school that were involved in this with you?
No,
No?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Pretty much on your own?
Pretty much on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was, I know the name, Chris, this has been years and years and years since I even thought about this, but there was a professor of sociologist, a professor of sociology, Wayne, I think his name was Wayne Belcher, at Bakersfield College. He was there for many years. And he was active, and he had a group that was active that I became part of. It was sort of an ad hoc group. I don't know. It's like in every community, no matter how conservative it is or how right-wing it is or how whatever it is, you always find some people. In this case, it was a handful of people, I think, relatively handful of people, that were active in more active in social action issues, but at great risk, really, to your own career and to your own, I don't want to say personal safety. I think that's a, no, I don't think that, but when you have organized campaigns, you know, sponsored by members of the John Birch Society, for example, trying to have you removed from your position as a teacher or as a Christian brother or, I mean, you know, at the age of, I don't know, how old was I? I don't know, at the age of 25 or 26 or something like that, that's pretty scary stuff.
How did your principal react in all this?
Oh, supportive. You know, I had a couple of, let's see, which principal did I have? Yes, I felt that he was supportive, really. When they appealed to the, when the group appealed to the bishop out of Fresno, he's the bishop of the diocese, which included Bakersfield, but he was stationed in Fresno, he did not accede to their demands. In fact, I remember he sent me a very short but very nice letter saying that, well, he didn't quite say keep on doing what you're doing, but he certainly gave me the impression, said nice things about it, you know. And I had parents that supported me. I fancied myself as a good teacher, as a challenging teacher, as a kind of leadership type of teacher. And that cuts both ways, of course. Some students really respond well to that, and take to it, and therefore their parents, you know, are somewhat enthusiastic because their son seems to be reading books and talking about things and debating and maybe arguing at home and this and that. And, you know, I mean, some parents really think that that's, you know, what education is about. Of course, it cuts the other way too. Some parents feel that they shouldn't be reading books that deal with these kinds of issues, and that it's leading their son astray, and that it's causing friction at home because he's bringing home ideas and thoughts and debating with the family, and they're getting into arguments. And, you know, I mean, nothing new.
Now, ultimately, you're going to make a shift from, you know, vice principal of Garces to being the staff of the National Farm Workers Association. Now, I know that there's a lot of layers, and, you know, I myself am an ex-seminarian. I quit in third philosophy. I was studying for Monterey Fresno. And, you know, it's not a simple, you know, one word or short answer, but more from the point of view of you, you know, stopping being Brother Gilbert and going back to be Leroy Chatfield and no longer being a vice principal, but becoming basically switching careers, as it were.
I mean,
so could we talk a little bit about that transition?
Sure.
What are the steps? How do we go? We go, you know, you're involved with Rumford, with the SNCC and civil rights, and...
Well, the step is, I believe, is Boston, Massachusetts. I went, 1963 in the summer, went to Boston, Massachusetts for the National Catholic Social Action Convention. And It was the first time I'd ever attended such a convention like that. And they had religious leaders and activists from all over the United States who were there. And talking about peace and civil rights and justice and da-da-da. And one of the panelists, one of the speakers, and I don't know whether it was Phil Berrigan or not, I'm not sure, but some panelists talked about Cesar Chavez and his work in Delano, California, with farm workers. And I was absolutely stunned. I could not believe that I came 3,000 miles to hear about something that was supposedly happening 30 miles away from where I was, and I considered myself in the know. I mean, I was interested in things like that. And if this was happening and I didn't know about it, either I was out of it or it wasn't really happening, mm-hmm. or something. So I came back. When I came back, first thing I did was try to track down Cesar. Mm-hmm. And of course, he did not have a telephone. And so he was not, I was no way I could mm-hmm. telephone him. So I started calling Chavez's in the phone book in Delano and came across his brother. And so I told his brother who I was, Richard. I told mm-hmm. Richard who I was. And I'd like to meet Cesar. And Richard was very guarded. I mean, I could, you know. Mm-hmm. He didn't know me. He didn't know why I wanted to. Anyway, he said he would get a message to him. So a week went by, I don't know, maybe even longer, I can't remember. But then I got a call from Cesar. And he introduced himself. And I believe he came over to Garces High School and we sat down and talked. I believe that's what happened. I might have gone over to Delano. Mm-hmm. I certainly did later on, but yeah. I mean, I forget which. Mm-hmm. But I think he came over, mm-hmm. actually. And we just hit it off mm-hmm. From the first mm-hmm. minutes that we met.
What was the discussion like? What did you talk about?
Oh, I was just asking him what he was doing, mm-hmm. and why he was doing it, and what was happening. And, mm-hmm. and he just began to explain what his thinking and what he wanted to do and how important it was and we just, you know, I mean, and he was interested in what he wanted to know about me and what I was doing and things I was interested in, and it was just but it just had a very simpatico type of beginning. I mean, it was just like we were sort of on the same wavelength, mm-hmm. so to speak. He was, what, I guess he was 6 years older than I at that time. And so we became fast friends, and he used to come and talk to my classes, and I would go to Delano and hang out at his mm-hmm. office and meet his family, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we talked. Cesar, of course, was a great organizer, especially on a one-on-one basis. Mm-hmm. And he took time, listened, was a very thoughtful person, yeah. very wise. And so what happened was the strike broke out in September 1965. In the meantime, I had left Garces at the end of August, in July of 65. And was had enrolled at USC to study for my doctorate in social work. Mm-hmm. And so then he called me in October and asked me if I could come to Delano and work with him because he needed help. Mm-hmm. And I had organized some money and some food and stuff to bring down. And so I had kept in contact with mm-hmm. him, of course, after the strike broke out mm-hmm. and then until he called me. So, when he called me, I basically felt I had to make a decision whether to stay as a Christian brother or to leave and to throw in with him. And
so it was as a Christian brother, you're going to go to USC?
Yeah, I was a Christian brother.
You were still a...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I was living at Cathedral High School, mm-hmm. right next to Dodger Stadium. And... So I told my religious superiors that I was leaving, that I had decided to leave to become an organizer for farm workers. And if you know anything about church bureaucracy and church procedure, you can appreciate that it can be a very cumbersome project for a person who has a member of a religious order and who has vows to be able to be bureaucratically released from those vows and da da da.
I was not yet ordained, clearly. I mean, third philosophy is a ways to go. However, I thought my reaction was it was a lot harder to get out of the seminary than it was to get in. The steps. You know, there were those who just disappeared, but I, you know, being a good seminarian and became a good ex-seminarian and followed it step by step. So,
yeah. I think, maybe I'm glossing this over, but I think I had my release papers within 24 hours. Yeah. From the time I told them that this is what I was going to do. I think, in looking back, I think the provincial, after all, you have to remember the Christian Brothers were owners of wineries employed farm workers, and the last thing they wanted was any union activity, I think. And so I think maybe they were tickled to death. When I say they, yeah. I mean the religious provincial and others maybe were tickled to death that I was not going to be a thorn in their side. I don't know. But anyway, I relocated to Delano, and the first thing was Caesar sent me off to raise funds in the Bay Area and LA area. Mm-hmm. And so I traveled constantly, primarily from university campuses, mm-hmm. because professors were very open to this type of 60s activity. And so I became a prodigious fundraiser.
For about what length of time?
Oh, gee, it's so...
This is be late 65 then, right?
Yeah, this is late 65. I guess late 65. I got married in June of 66. And I bought a mobile home, a Fleetwood mobile home, 10 feet wide, 58 feet long. And my wife and I set up shop in Torrance, California, in a mobile home park. That was our first location after we were married. And we were fundraising in primarily the Beverly Hills and West LA area, primarily the Jewish community, frankly, the Jewish and liberal community of Los Angeles, fundraising for the farm workers. Now that doesn't mean that I was exclusively there. I mean, I was sometime in Delano, back and forth, you know, that kind of thing.
But Torrance is the base.
We lived in Torrance. Yeah. The base was on Olympic Boulevard.
Okay, out of the office.
That's where the office was, yeah. On Olympic and Bundy. Mm-hmm. I think it can't be too far from where Nicole Simpson lived, I guess.
Yeah.
Sad to say. Anyway, then I produced a Joan Baez concert, I think in the fall. Of maybe it was August or September of at Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. She did back-to-back benefit performances for the farm workers and raised, I'm trying to think, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, I think, which was awfully large sums in those days. And then Caesar wanted me to come back to Delano, which I did. And I became the director of the National Farm Worker Service Center, which became the charitable nonprofit parallel organization of the Farm Workers Union, which in those days was called the National Farm Workers
Association.
Right.
Yeah, because they
didn't use the word union.
Yeah.
In the early days, he told me he was afraid to use the word union because he was afraid the growers would be so, you know.
But that was organizing committee.
Yeah. No, I think that was a little later on, actually. Yeah. But anyway, I lose track of the sequence. But anyway, then we moved back and we lived on, we put our mobile home at Arroyo Strike Camp. It was called the Arroyo Strike Camp is what it was called, because the Filipinos, you see, they had their own organization. They were the farm youth.
Agricultural Workers Organizing.
Organizing Committee. AWOC. Right. AWOC.
Yeah, and AWOC and NFWA did become UFWOC.
UFWOC. Right. Yeah. That's right.
Right.
But anyway, so they had their base at Filipino Hall, and Caesar had his base at Arroyo Camp, So we put our trailer out there and we dug our own cesspool and that's where the first farm workers clinic was out there, and that's where.
This is the service center then, right?
No. The service center actually, the service center opened up in a house right next to, or in back of, and right next to. Caesar's office, the union headquarters on Albany, 102 Albany, as I recall, and I forget what street the service center was on, but it was just that we just rented another house right next to the union there, and we just converted it into a service center. I had an office there. Credit Union had an office, and we had an all-purpose room where we helped farm workers in whatever. Walk-in problems they had, you know, anything from unemployment to welfare to taxes to driver's licenses to whatever it was. Yeah.
It was a truly multi-service center.
It was. That had been one of Caesar's dreams for a long time, was to have, you know, people that were trained and who could listen and who understand what the needs were and then actually, you know, work on a one-by-one basis to actually try.